This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic on this segment of the program is an update of workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are Lester Friedman, a past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's the management chair of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, commonly referred to as CAW, that's C-AAA. His offices are in Beverly Hills. My next guest is Jason Marcus, the secretary of CAW, and he's a partner in Marcus, Regalado & Marcus in Sacramento. My third guest is Alice O'Sullivan, a past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. She's now a director of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. My guests are certified specialists in workers' compensation law, and funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association and the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding for the program is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Lester and Jason, are you there?
Yes, we are.
I am here.
This is wonderful. Great to hear you, and that's what conferencing can do. If you would, there's something relatively new that I think most people don't know about in the workers' compensation area called Returned to Work Fund and its benefits, the voucher system and benefits. Jason, would you talk about this, please?
Certainly. So the new thing is what is called the Return to Work Supplement Program, or as we call it, the Return to Work Fund. This is something that was passed into law back in 2013 as part of the latest workers' comp reform called Senate Bill 863, or SB 863 as we refer to it. And it's a $120 million annual fund that is managed by the state of California that is paid by employers in the state. And the purpose of this money is to provide payments to injured workers who typically are not able to return to their at-injury job following a work-related injury. And this, we say new, even though it went into law in 2013, the regulations, that is, the rules and the procedure for how the money is distributed, how it's paid out, who gets it, those types of things, didn't go into effect until April 13, 2015. So just a couple of months ago, those regulations went into effect.
And this covers, what does it cover in terms of persons who have gone through the workers' compensation system? Who qualifies as of what date prior to April 13, 2015?
So there are really two things that you need to qualify for this fund, the Return to Work Fund. First is you have to have suffered a work-related injury on or after January 1st, 2013. So if you were hurt prior to that date, you are not eligible for these funds. The second thing you need to have, in addition to being hurt on or after January 1st, 2013, is you have to have received what is called a supplemental job displacement benefit. We call it a voucher because it's frankly a lot easier to say. The voucher is a benefit that is provided to injured workers who suffer an injury and are not offered either their regular job or some sort of modified or alternative work by their at-injury employer following a specified time after their injury has reached a point that we call permanent and stationary, that essentially their condition is stabilized. And the voucher is a separate benefit from the Return to Work Fund. The voucher is a job retraining benefit. And for people that are hurt on or after January 1st, 2013, the voucher is a $6,000 coupon, if you will. It's not a payment to the worker. It's money that the worker can use for schooling, classes, retraining, skills development, those types of things. And then up to $6,000 is paid out to the appropriate facility, school, what have you, for that retraining.
Who is responsible, if I may, for just a moment, seeing to it that a voucher is issued?
Well, the regulations require, this is Lester, the regulations require that the claims administrator send a notification to the injured worker notifying them that it is available. The payment is not made, however, on the voucher, that is the opportunity to use that voucher, until there is a determination or a finding of as to the level of disability. So even though a person may be notified that they are not able to return to work, the voucher itself may not become due and payable until there is an actual determination as to the level of disability.
Well, and Lester, forgive me, that is true if you got hurt prior to 2013. And it's very confusing, Chuck and Lester, because, again, they've changed the laws on us. But if you got hurt on or after 1/1/13, the level of your voucher is no longer tied to what Lester was talking about, the determination of your disability. It used to be before 2013 that how much you got for the voucher depended on your ultimate overall level of disability that you suffered because of a work injury. That's no longer the case starting in 2013. And Lester, forgive me for...
No, and that's absolutely correct, but I believe the payment of the voucher is still dependent upon the finding of a level of disability, or maybe that's changed also.
It has. It's a flat $6,000 for anyone hurt on or after 2013, regardless of the overall level of disability.
And the payment is due at what point in time?
When the voucher becomes due.
And the voucher is due at what point in time in the process?
Typically, the voucher is due within 30 days, or the potential eligibility for the voucher, I should say, is due within 30 days of when your what is called temporary disability benefits have ended. That is, if you are off work and getting what is called temporary disability, a wage loss benefit in the workers' comp system, 30 days after that benefit ends is when we determine whether or not you're going to get that voucher in most cases.
So if the carrier at that point in time after that 30 days has elapsed where they're supposed to notify you whether or not there is alternate or modified work available, then that letter should come out at that point in time offering you the voucher if your injury is after January 1st of 2013. Is that right?
That's my understanding. Now, that may not always happen, but that's how it's supposed to work. And Chuck, if this sounds confusing, I'm so sorry, because frankly it is.
Yeah.
We're doing our best to try to break this down, but this system, quite honestly, is just getting more and more confusing and more rules as years go on, and it is a very complicated process.
What about this? My understanding, and someone who I know who works for a major national market, who had great difficulty for a while getting medical treatment. What's the situation going on of getting medical treatment? For example, let me throw this out. Let me throw this out to you. If someone has been given an award and has a medical award for years, and then something happens. Let's say the doctor who's been treating this person retires, dies, whatever. Perhaps the doctor moves somewhere, and the person who's been injured now finds that, gee, I was getting such great medical treatment, but now I've got to go somewhere else, and I don't feel I'm getting the kind of care that I'd like to have. What can you tell us about that? Alice is looking at me and questioning me. This is something that I have discussed and wondered if you talk about.
I think it's an important issue, Chuck, but I would like to go back, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to go back to the voucher, because I don't think we've covered enough information.
Please.
I think there's a lot more information that Lester and Jason can share with us for people who have either received the voucher, used the voucher, or are eligible to receive a voucher. I had a question about the voucher itself. Supposing the injured worker has gotten a voucher after they got it after the January 1st, 13 date. But they've used it. They went to school. They've used their $6,000. Are they still eligible for this fund?
They are. So, and for clarity's sake, we're talking really about two different benefits. The voucher, or the supplemental job displacement benefit, is the job retraining benefit, which, again, for people hurt on or after 1/1/13, is a $6,000 fund, if you will, that they can access for schooling. If they get that voucher, whether they've used it or not, they now, again, just for clarity, this is people injured on or after January 1st, 2013, they now may apply for a payment from this Return to Work Supplement Program. That's the $120 million fund I mentioned earlier. And the current rules provide that if you get a voucher and were hurt on or after 1/1/13, there's an application that must be completed online, but you essentially scan and send in a copy of your voucher, which is a paper form that you physically receive from the insurance company. You fill out some additional information, you submit it, and assuming all goes well, you will receive a check for $5,000 from the state of California paid out of this Return to Work Fund.
Mm-hmm. And supposing you're eligible for a voucher, but you never got a voucher?
Well, the first step is then getting the voucher, and that's going to be something that is either done by, if the person has an attorney, contacting his or her attorney and asking for help. If they don't have an attorney, they would want to contact either the insurance adjuster, the claims adjuster on their file, or we have what are called information and assistance officers that work in the court system that handles workers' compensation claims, and those people, the information and assistance officers, exist solely to help injured workers that don't have an attorney.
How does someone find those information and assistance officers? What's the practicality of trying to find someone like that?
Well, first of all, if you have an attorney, the attorney should be able to assist you in obtaining the supplemental, the return to work payment of $5,000. If you do not have an attorney, or you can't find your attorney, or hopefully this will not occur, but the attorney doesn't want to get involved in that, the information assistance officers are located in each district office of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. So there are various, I think it's 13, maybe more or less, offices throughout the state. Certainly in every major metropolitan area, there is a Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. And the procedure varies somewhat in terms of whether you need to have an appointment to see the information assistance officer or whether or not you can walk in. There is a phone number, which I can try and look for, that can help you assist you in finding the INA officer, which is information assistance, in your local area. And that toll-free number, if I may give it, is 1-800-736-7401. One more time, 1-800-736-7401.
And Lester, getting help.
An attorney or represented by an attorney, the attorney should be the one who makes the initial contacts for you.
If someone calls the toll free number, I'm presuming if someone gets help from one of the district officers, information and assistance officers, there's no charge that the injured person is going to be subjected to. Is that right?
That is a correct statement.
These, now, let me come back to this, though.
Are quite skilled, work for the state of California, and they are there to assist each individual, and there is no charge.
What about the return-to-work supplement that you've talked about of $5,000 that you may be able to get? If you have an attorney, is there a basis for an attorney who's helping you to get that to be paid or not?
Currently, there is not. There's
I
no
see.
Provision
okay.
for an attorney fee to be paid from that fund.
Let me just stop you for a moment and let the listeners know. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on recent developments in the workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are, and we haven't heard much from her, and we're going to get her to talk more, Alice O'Sullivan, past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. She's now a director of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Lester Friedman, past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's the management chair of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, which we will refer to from now on as CAW. And Jason Marcus, the secretary of CAW. And those of you who are listening to us live, we'll be taking some calls in the second half hour of the program. We are live in the Bay Area. We're live on the Internet at www.kalw.org. We're also live now on the public radio satellite. And I'll give you the phone number now. We're doing this, by the way, this program on July 1st, 2015. The toll-free number, if you want to call in the second half hour, which is just a few minutes from now, is 866-798-8255 with your workers' compensation questions. 866-798-8255. Alice, please go ahead.
If you are entitled to a voucher, but you settle that as part of your workers' compensation case, can you still apply for this fund?
Well, I don't think you're allowed to settle vouchers that are due after January 1st, 2013. Is that correct, Jason?
That's correct. So, interesting question, but really, you cannot settle out your voucher or your right to the voucher, as Lester said, for folks that are hurt 2013 or later.
Well, I just want to just to clarify, because I've had this question actually on our Call a Lawyer night. There is a place on the compromise and release that indicates a voucher, or it can be written. I mean, some people write it in. Probably their attorneys aren't aware, or perhaps they represent themselves, where they settle the voucher. So if, in fact, they have, quote, settled it, do I understand that since you can't settle it, you would still then be entitled to a voucher and therefore the fund?
Potentially. I can tell you from my own experience, I practice in Sacramento and almost exclusively practice at the Sacramento District Office of the Workers' Comp Board. Our judges there are refusing to approve a compromise and release that has that issue checked on the document. This is a case where the forms haven't quite caught up to the law, and our judges are uniformly refusing to approve a settlement where the parties are attempting intentionally or unintentionally to settle out the voucher for a 2013 or a later injury.
Okay, good.
All right. And anything else on this, or can we move to another topic?
Well, I do want to make one more point, and forgive me for belaboring this, but it's important. There currently exists, or I should say there is, a one-year deadline for which an injured worker can apply for this return to work fund. And that deadline is either 1 year from the date that their voucher issued or 1 year from the date that the regulations that I referred to earlier went into effect, whichever is later of those two. Those regulations went into effect on April 13, 2015, which means that all workers at this point that have a voucher for a 2013 or later injury, regardless of when they got that voucher, have until at least April 13, 2016 to submit their application. But after that point, if someone got a voucher in January of this year and they haven't applied by April 13 of next year, they are going to lose the right to apply for that fund. And so this is something that we're trying to get the word out to let people know it's available, you may have a right to it, and it's definitely something you don't want to miss out on, because the money is there. It needs to be paid out to these injured workers, and we want to get as much of this money paid out as we can to workers who need this money, frankly.
And is that $5,000?
What that means is if anybody out there has had a work injury that is after January 1st of 2013, and either they have an attorney, they should contact their attorney. If they don't have an attorney, they should contact the INA officer, who will that's the information assistance officer at the local workers' comp board, and that INA officer will assist them in complying with the rules in order to get that extra $5,000 return to work payment.
And everybody gets $5,000. Is that it? There's no somebody doesn't get three or four. It's always five.
Correct.
That is correct.
And what do you do, what are you supposed to do with this $5,000, you as the injured person? What are you supposed to do with it?
Well, the concept behind the payment of what is now a $5,000 payment is that people who are unable to return to work suffer a greater loss than what people who are able to return to work suffer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's really a $5,000 payment as a makeup payment, so to speak, and it's theirs to do whatever they choose to do with.
What is the importance of, for the public generally, of retaining, if someone is injured in an accident and has an injury that obviously is going to require some absence from work, it's going to require some medical attention for a period of time, how important is it for someone to look to get a certified specialist in workers' comp law?
It's funny because Jason and I were talking off air about the quality of representation, at least in his office and in my office, that a person gets in terms of the longevity of staying with a injured worker even after a case settles. I think that the degree of representation and the commitment that you get from certified specialists is much greater than that you get from other attorneys. Not saying that other attorneys are not qualified, but I just think that once you go to a certified specialist, you're getting that commitment to that you might not otherwise get.
Also, I think that with all of these new rules coming in and dates and times, it gets to be extremely confusing. And I think for someone who doesn't do workers' compensation as a large part of their practice, it's going to be overwhelming. And the chances of missing one of these dates is greater if you don't do a lot of practice. And as a certified specialist, there's a minimum amount of practice one has to do. So I think that's an important part.
Are there problems today in the system with people getting adequate medical treatment?
It is a problem right now.
This is Jason. Go ahead. Tell us what is the problem and what is CAW trying to do to alleviate this problem, if anything?
Well, the problem as I see it is that Senate Bill 863, which again came into law in 2013, changed the way that both in how doctors have to submit and fashion a request for treatments, or what we call a request for authorization for their treatment, and how we deal with dispute resolutions that arise from treatment issues. For example, you know, an injured worker's doctor thinks that they need some physical therapy. So the doctor submits a special form, specifies what they're requesting, sends it to the insurance carrier. The insurance carrier can either authorize that request or submit it out to what's called utilization review, which is where an outside doctor that doesn't evaluate the worker or talk to the injured worker gets to make a decision about whether the treatment request is consistent with treatment guidelines that we have in place, and essentially gives a thumbs up or a thumbs down for the treatment. If it's approved, the worker gets the treatment. If it's denied, there's a second level that the worker or his or her attorney can request called independent medical review, or IMR, where again another doctor, this time we don't even know the name of a doctor, it's an anonymous doctor who again doesn't see the worker, doesn't talk to the worker, gets to make a decision whether the treatment was or was not consistent with the treatment guidelines that are in place. Essentially, it's utilization review part two. And what we have seen in my own practice, Lester can attest to it, and throughout CAW and the other applicant attorneys that I've talked to, is we are seeing medical treatment decisions left and right being sent through utilization review and then through independent medical review being denied on a regular basis, including folks who may have had medical awards that date back 5, 10, or more years, have been treating on a regular basis on a very consistent regimen, and now suddenly their treatment is being interrupted or denied. And the way that they have fashioned the independent medical review and the appeals process surrounding that, it frankly gives us, the representatives of injured workers, very little tools to challenge or contest a treatment denial that has gone up through independent medical review. So it's frustrating, frankly, to put it mildly.
And is it
the whole process of having both utilization and review and independent medical review is basically textbook medicine. If you don't cross all of your T's and dot all of your I's, even if you need the treatment, the utilization review or the independent medical review doctor can say, well, you didn't show us this, therefore, since you didn't show us this, we're going to deny it as not being medically necessary because it doesn't fit the box that is required in order to get the treatment. It's just not that way in regular medicine. When you have a non-work injury, a doctor is allowed to prescribe and make recommendations based on his clinical judgment. It doesn't work that way anymore in workers' compensation.
Is there anything being done to try to change that, to make it more harmonious with people who are receiving treatment that is not related to work injuries?
There is. You know, CAW has a legislative arm that tries to work within the legislature to craft legislative solutions, and we are always involved in that. There's no pending bills that I'm aware of that are going to specifically address that, but that's always going on. The second thing, though, that CAW does and is doing is we have what we call an amicus committee, or amicus, A-I-A-M-I-C-U-S, which is a fancy word for friend of the court. And some of these cases, as they go through our court system, make it up to our appellate court or even our California Supreme Court, where we're asking those high courts to weigh in on workers' compensation issues. And CAW's amicus committee often participates in those cases, whether it's filing a brief in support of a party or even appearing and arguing in front of a court on behalf of an injured worker to support CAW's position on these matters.
Everybody, we have come to the end of the statewide version. That's the half hour that is distributed to 15 other stations in California. For those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue after this very short, brief moment. All right. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Let me give you the number if you'd like to call in, ask a question of my guest. The number, toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you tune in a little bit late, we're talking about recent developments in workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are Jason Marcus, the Secretary of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. He's a partner in the Marcus Regalado and Marcus Law Firm in Sacramento. Lester Friedman, a past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He is the management chair of California Applicants Attorneys Association, CAW. His offices are in Beverly Hills. And certainly third, but certainly not last by any means, is Alice O'Sullivan, a past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. She's now a director of the National Board of Legal Specialization. I'm really getting it all mixed up, aren't I? The National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds our public radio transmission of the program. And all three guests are certified specialists in workers' compensation law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. So please join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns, and we'll get to the first caller in just a minute. And Jason, I kind of cut you off. Would you like to complete what you were saying?
Yeah, that's fine. I realize that we have these radio considerations, but very as brief as I can make it, going back to the question, what is CAW doing? Well, our amicus committee is currently working in partnership with an injured worker and that worker's attorney in a case called the Stevens case, which is currently up at the Court of Appeals. I believe it's the First District Court of Appeals. Lester,
I think that's correct.
Yeah. This is a case where Francis Stevens, the injured worker, is challenging the constitutionality of the independent medical review system. Workers' comp in California ultimately exists in our state constitution. That's where the system originates. And the Constitution gives the legislature great power to create a system, but we believe there are limits to that power. And the Stevens case is challenging the independent medical review system as running afoul of the Constitution. CAW has been supporting the case as it's moved up. It's currently set for oral argument, I believe, on September 30 of this year. CAW will be participating in that, and we are hoping that that case helps relieve some of the pressure that we were just talking about with respect to medical treatment and independent medical review, and hopefully a bright light at the end of the tunnel for us.
Is it the basic theory that the independent medical review is really one where whoever the doctor is who's doing the review doesn't even see the patient or see the person who's been injured?
It ultimately boils down to a denial of due process, and I don't mean to misstate or simplify the arguments. The lawyers that are working on that case have crafted beautiful arguments, but at the end of the day, I believe it really comes down to due process, and the problem as we see it with independent medical review is it's not clear what evidence is being considered by this anonymous doctor or what legal standard or what medical standard is being applied by this doctor. And one of the hallmarks of our democracy and our court system is that you have a right to know what evidence is being heard, what standards are being applied. And without that, there can be no due process, and we don't believe those things exist in the current independent medical review process as it exists. And that's what's being challenged in that case.
Jason, just quickly for attorneys who are listening, this CAW amicus committee is open and encourages attorneys who have legal cases that are important to the whole system that they contact that committee because they're experts in all of this. Is that a fair statement?
That's absolutely true. If you have a case that is going up on appeal or even you think may go up on appeal that raises whether a constitutional issue or some other issue that you think is important for the broad California workers' comp system, we would request that you contact the state office for CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, which is in Sacramento. And may I give that phone number?
Oh, please, Jason, yeah.
That phone number is 916-444-5155.
And this is whether you're a member or not, is that right?
That's correct, yes. There is also, we have a website, which is www.caaa.org. And you can find all the contact information on our webpage. And if you get your information, the CAW staff will put you in touch with the amicus committee and see if they think they can help out.
So the webpage, again, is www.cawcaaa.org. Let me take a call now, if you would. Maria, welcome, and thank you for being patient. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for having me on. I'm currently in the situation of gang treatment. I was approved by the insurance company, and I got an application for independent medical review because they want to modify it by half. And I did fill out the application, and the doctor that I saw was in the MPS network of theirs, and when I called my claim adjuster, she said that I have nothing to do with it, that the doctor has to fill out the application, and I'm not sure what that means.
Maria, you are not represented by an attorney, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and where at this point is your case? Have you gone before the Workers' Compensation Board, or what? Where are you at this point?
At this point, I got accepted of workers' comp benefits by the insurance company. They sent me a letter that I have medical benefits within the MPN network. That I have temporary disability benefits and also medical mileage.
Medical mileage. Okay.
Yes.
Maybe I can get some comments from my guests for you.
Okay.
And your basic question, Maria, is what?
Am I entitled to anything else? Currently, I'm not working. I can return to work with restrictions, but I cannot perform my regular career, which I performed for 7 years.
Oh, my.
And my employer is not willing to give me any alternative work.
Let me get some comments for you. And also, Maria, I think you can probably take their comments off the air. Please understand that with your specific question that you have posed, the State Bar's ethics rules don't give my or prohibit my guests from giving specific legal advice on the air. But what we generally try to do is try to give you some direction of what you should do next. So if you'll turn your radio back up and get the answer, let me start with my guests, either Lester or Jason. What comments do you have for Maria?
I'm not exactly clear what she's asking for in terms of filing something. Jason, were you able to figure that out?
Well, I think what she was talking about is that her doctor requested some form of treatment, and that request was modified to half of whatever it was. So maybe the doctor said you should have 8 physical therapy sessions. They authorized 4. And I think she was asking about submitting an application for independent medical review, which is what we've been talking about.
Yes.
I heard Maria say that her adjuster told her that Maria has no role in submitting that application, that it must be done by a doctor. That could not be further from the truth.
Mm.
Her doctor may submit an application for independent medical review on her behalf, but Maria has every right in the world to fill out and submit that application and request an independent medical review of the treatment modification that apparently was done in her case. So I want to make sure she hears that.
And in fact, the claims administrator needs to send that to both the applicant, to the injured worker, and to the doctor, correct?
Correct. That being the application form. There's a 1-page application form to request independent medical review that is required that the claims adjuster send that form to the worker and his or her doctor whenever there has been a utilization review decision denying or modifying a treatment request.
Is it too late for Maria, who obviously, in that she does not have an attorney, probably is quite confused about with the information she's at least given to us, quite confused about what her next step is. Is it too late for her to get an attorney?
You know, not at all. In fact, one of the casualties in the system right now for the insurance carriers is this is exactly what drives injured workers into attorneys' offices, because there are these silly denials of treatment where a doctor will ask for 8 physical therapy visits and then the utilization review only allows 4, and then both the doctor and the injured worker throw their hands up, and next thing you know, they're coming to see an attorney. Is that your experience, Jason?
That is exactly my experience, that frankly, cases where benefits are paid promptly and without question, those are not often the cases I see coming through my door, because people don't tend to call me out or call an attorney unless there's a problem, unless something is being denied or something isn't being provided to them. That's when they go, in most cases, looking for an attorney.
Can Maria go to the CAW website and find out where certified specialists in workers' compensation law are located in her area? She's calling from Alameda County.
On the front page of the CAW website, there is at the top a menu for injured workers, and she would want to go there. And then right below, once she clicks on that, there is an attorney search page where she can put in specific information such as whether the attorney is a certified specialist, what geographic area she wants to look at, and find a list of workers' compensation attorneys in her area.
And Maria, the website again for CAW is www.caaa.org. Also, the California Board of Legal Specialization has a website that you might want to also look at. for your area in Alameda County. That's www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left of your screen on your computer to Legal Specialist. Click that on and put in Alameda County, and that'll tell you who the certified the certified specialists in workers' compensation are. So good luck to you.
Just a quick caveat. That particular website does not tell you whether the certified specialist represents injured workers or defendants.
Oh.
So I think it's important when you make your call, before you start telling your story, it's important that you ask whether they represent injured workers.
Very good. Thank you, Alice. That's a very good point. I hope you got that, Maria. All right. Our number here, in case you would like to call in, ask a question, make a comment to my guests, is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free number that we are now using for the program. Before we go to our next caller, support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation, both in San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, and this should be during business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you are in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service, I should say. You can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what the problem is in a variety of problems that you may have legally. And they'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. With rare exception, for lawyer referral, for a half an hour consultation, you will pay throughout California a low of $25, a high of $35. The money doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service as a consumer service. All right. We're going to talk now with Katie, who is also from Oakland. Welcome to the program. Thank you for being patient.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll try to be as concise as possible because it's kind of a convoluted question. I work for a deli and was injured in February and went to my personal doctor. Did not say that it was a work-related injury because I woke up in the morning with the pain. And I feel like possibly a little bit ignorant of, you know, what had happened. Had a lot of pain, went through treatment with my own personal doctor. And then received treatment and went back to work. And this was in February. And then went back to work in March. As of April 10th, I got injured at work, same shoulder injury. But it clearly happened at work. I'm lifting lots of heavy things. I'm pretty petite and have to move machinery that weighs close to how much I weigh. And there's been other injuries from people doing the same job as me pretty consistently at this workplace.
Is it from lifting heavy objects? Is that it?
Yeah, it's from lifting heavy objects to clean under them and also reaching and above my head to lift heavy objects and reaching the cases that are not ergonomic where I have to be on tiptoe to reach the front of the case.
Yeah.
So very likely caused at work. And the workplace agrees and says, yes, at least the second one definitely happened at work, was caused by what I was doing at work. The insurance, however, has asked for a QME panel. And I'm just kind of, it's now June, and a lot of things have happened because one thing was incorrect on the worksheet that I had to fill out for the QME panel. So now I'm back to work as of last week, and I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, I've been 2 months without pay, which has been a little rough. I'm back at work now. But I'm just wondering, time-wise, like what happens at a QME panel and how long should I expect to find out what their verdict is? Because I think they're challenging whether the second injury actually happened at work.
Now, Katie, you do not have an attorney at this point. Is that right?
I do not.
Okay. Stay on the line. Don't go away. I want to get some comments from my guests. Who wants to start? Jason or Lester, who wants to start on this?
I can start as Lester. The doctor does not determine whether an injury occurred at work. The doctor determines whether or not the medical condition is what effect on your body the injury has occurred.
Yeah.
If they're saying that it didn't occur at work, that's not something that the PQME or the QME is going to determine. Jason?
Okay.
Yeah, the QME, or what we call a qualified medical evaluator, which is a doctor that can be assigned in the workers' comp system to address disputed legal medical issues like the nature and extent of the injury, is essentially going to say, what's the diagnosis? And it medically, is there a connection between the diagnosis or the injury and the job activities or the job exposure? Again, it's confusing without knowing the specifics whether the issue is did it happen at work or is it a work-related injury or is there any injury at all, which sometimes can be the issue.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend she do at this point?
Well, if she has already seen the QME doctor, that QME
is
supposed
to...
She has not, Jason. She has not. She has not.
Have you received the what's called panel list, which is a list of three doctors?
No, they are supposed to send that to me. They have been delayed this entire time. I've had issues with paperwork and them sending me the correct forms.
Yeah, that's... I wish I could say I was surprised by that, but I'm not. In a perfect world, at some point in the very near future, you should get a list of three doctors that we call a panel QME list. You, as the injured worker, what we call an unrepresented worker, meaning you don't have a lawyer, you get to pick from one of those three doctors. So you pick one doctor, you call that doctor, set up an appointment with the doctor. The insurance company gets notice of that. The insurance company is responsible for sending your medical records to the doctor. You go see the QME, have an evaluation, and you're supposed to get a report from the QME no less than 30 days from the date of the evaluation, although I will tell you it often can take longer than that, but by the book, it's supposed to be a report issued within 30 days of the initial evaluation with the QME.
With the facts that Katie has presented to us, at this point, do you think it would be well for her to obtain an attorney, a workers' compensation certified specialist to help her with this case at this point?
At the very least, I would suggest trying to consult with an attorney. Most attorneys, if not all, I can't speak for all, but I can speak for Lester and I and pretty much every other attorney I know that does workers' compensation. We don't charge for the initial consultation, so assuming an attorney is willing to meet with you, you won't be charged for that, and whether you ultimately decide to hire an attorney or that attorney wants to take on your case, hopefully the attorney could at least explain the process in more detail, make sure that you're going in the right direction, and give you some specific advice to the facts of your case and where things are at procedurally with your case.
Katie, that seems to make a lot of sense. We're going to move on because we have someone else who's been waiting quite a while.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you. Good luck to you. And be aggressive in terms of trying to get help, at least a consultation from a workers' compensation certified specialist. Did you get the websites that we have been talking about?
No, I did not.
All right. Let me give you the CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys website. Are you ready to write?
Yes, I am.
www.caaa.org. And you can search on that and find an attorney in your area. You're also in Alameda County, and certainly try to find a certified specialist who obviously represents injured workers and get an initial consultation.
Okay.
All right. Take care now. Good luck. Bye
bye.
Cheryl, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I'm actually calling, my sister is the patient. And I was wondering if there's some sort of a clearinghouse kind of thing to speak to all of the issues, in one place. Her attorney doesn't seem to be doing anything to help her.
She's an injured worker, Cheryl?
Yes. And she's in this whole process, because it's been so lengthy, she hasn't even, she's lost her job.
Oh, my. When was she injured? How long ago?
The initial injury was in 2010.
And she's had an additional injury since then?
Well, yes, she has. Yeah, because she had to go back to work too soon.
Mm-hmm.
They said, oh, well, you're fine now. And she went back to work, and it just was re-injured.
And what city is she in? Where was she injured? What city?
She's in Alameda County.
Alameda County also.
Mm-hmm.
Is her attorney a certified specialist in workers' compensation law?
As far as I know.
Yeah.
That's what they're claiming to be.
How long has she been represented by this attorney or this law firm?
At least 2 years.
I see. Well, and she's very dissatisfied. I'm wondering from my guests if there would be some point of her getting another opinion from a certified specialist. Lester and Jason and Alice, what thoughts do you have on this?
This is Lester. I was a little disturbed by the comment that that's what they claim to be, because it's certainly easy enough to check whether or not the attorney is a certified specialist just by going to the website that was mentioned previously. That'll certainly tell you whether or not the person is a certified specialist. As far as getting a second opinion, I know my policy is to always speak to anyone who gives me a call regarding a case that is going on. However, if I determine that the person who is representing the injured worker is qualified, that is, they're either a certified specialist and or a member of CAW, and if I am familiar with their work, I really encourage them to go back to their attorney and really try and work it out. I don't think it's beneficial, in my opinion, to go attorney hopping, because what that shows the insurance company or the other side is that you're not really, you're a difficult client. And that's
she's,
not the
she's
impression
not.
That
yeah.
I would want to have shown to the other side, because then they think, the insurance company thinks that they can get away with a lot more because the client is difficult.
Also, right. Also, I and think it's important to know.
Cheryl, hold on. I want Alice to respond to you. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I think it's important, Cheryl, for your sister to know that workers' compensation is a volume practice, and so the attorney doesn't always have the as much time as people think maybe they should have to go over. And some attorneys now take email questions, and that's a good way if she has a series of questions that she feels hasn't been answered. Send your attorney an email and with all your questions there, and then they can respond, you know, maybe late at night or whenever they're working, they can respond to you at their leisure.
And let me make something clear. This is brought to my attention now. It is understood that a workers' compensation advocate or attorney will recover no fee unless her client is actually compensated. Does everybody, my guests, agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, I hope all of you heard that. And Cheryl, I hope you can do something to help yourself further.
Chuck, and if I may add one thing, not only that, any fee that is paid to an attorney must be approved by a workers' compensation judge.
Yeah, okay. So there you are, Cheryl. Good luck to you.
Is there an overarching place that... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Continue.
Okay. Is there some sort of an overarching place that can listen to everything that she's been through and give her some advice on where to go next?
Wow, that's quite a question. Turn your radio back up. Let me see if we have some response. Jason and Lester and Alice, any comment on that? Someone who would review the entire thing and give her an opinion?
Well, I mean, my hope that could be her current attorney if they can work out their differences, and if not, then the next best option I think would be the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, whether an information assistance officer or a workers' compensation judge. You know, I've seen a number of times when a worker is either has to fire their attorney for some reason or isn't getting along, there may need to be a judge intervening to try to sort things out. But I can't think of any other forum that comes to mind where those kinds of questions would be answered other than an attorney or someone involved in the at the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board.
It strikes me that, you know, this overarching view of the case, if her sister has certain questions, I think that would be more important because she knows what the case is, her attorney knows what the case is. Does she have questions on what's happened in the past? Does she have questions on what's going to happen in the future? Whatever her questions are, she needs to make those questions known to her attorney.
To her current attorney.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that an information and assistance officer will consult with a an injured worker who is presently represented. That doesn't mean that they can't fire their attorney to get assistance from the INA officer, but I don't think that they will consult with represented workers.
I think you're correct on that. It was I was thinking ahead that if that attorney-client relationship comes to an end, then that may be an option. But I still think the first thing is to try to reach out to the current attorney and whether it's schedule an appointment, present those questions in writing, do something to try to explain what it is they're looking for and hopefully get the answers they're looking for. That's really, I think, the best way to try to resolve it.
We have come.
I totally agree with you, and I don't also think a judge would get involved in it, at least when the person is represented, perhaps, and of course, when an INA officer is involved, they would listen, but I think the best remedy is to speak to the current attorney.
One thing that I want to throw in here, the Employment Development Department of the State of California, you should look into that also to see if you might get some benefits from there. We have come to the end of the program. I want to thank the three of you very much.
Thank you, Chuck.
For being here. Alice O'Sullivan, Lester Friedman, Jason Marcus, they are certified specialists in workers' compensation law through the California Board of Legal Specialization. They are members of CAW, California Applicants Attorneys Association. Mr. Friedman is the management chair of CAW. Jason Marcus is the secretary of CAW. Alice O'Sullivan is the former chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. She's now a director of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. And funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Additional funding of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Next week, we're going to do a program on an update of actually landlord-tenant law and issues and disputes. My guests will be landlord-tenant attorney James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld. Also, Robin Levine, who's a hearing officer for Section 8 voucher issues in San Francisco. Section 8 is the federal law. That's next week. We will also have a Call a Lawyer night for those of you who might want to call in on 800-525-9917. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. I'm Chuck Finney.